Hello and welcome to the Confidential Podcast, where we discuss and demystify life and everything that impacts it. I'm Simone Gisondi, author, health strategist, life transformation consultant, and overall life enthusiast. I dive deep into the fascinating world of life with each show. Each episode features in-depth conversations with experts, thought leaders, as well as personal stories and experiences that will bring the world around us to life. Whether you're a curious newcomer or a passionate enthusiast, come with me on a journey of discovery and enlightenment. Tune in every week and join me as I demystify all things that touch life.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me again on The Confidential. Today, we're going to talk about that really interesting topic called divorce. And you are going to hear from one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And I will tell you, she's a professional. She's one of my soul sisters on the Libra scales, and also an amazing, amazing, she's a functional medicine practitioner, and the depth of her knowledge is so, so incredible. You wouldn't believe it. So let me tell you first, because it's quite a long list of her achievements, so bear with me. But then we're going to dive deep into the world of divorce, because she, like me, is also divorced and she's a woman. So we wanted to kind of dive deep into what it takes, how we kind of traverse those waters, and how we came out unscathed on the other side. I assume she's unscathed because she's really strong. She's a strong woman, one of the strongest I know.
Thank you.
Yes. So Connie is actually, like I said, a functional medicine practitioner. She talks about how you can use it to increase your chances of being healthy, conceiving if you're having any trouble with fertility. And also, she's a holistic nutritionist, right? Like me. You studied nutrition as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
Personal trainer, like me. That's how we met. That's our connection. She's also a fitness competitor, and she kicked ass. On the education side, she also has a master degree in immunology and virology. And trust me, this girl knows what's going on with health, especially now in today's world. So digestive health is one of her specialties, immune boosting protocols, which is, I always get a lot of information from her. I call her and I bounce things off her. She also works with women that experience hormonal and adrenal imbalances due to stress. And I know this is kind of tied in with divorce, because there's a lot of stress that affects us women, especially hormonally, when we go through that, aging, menopause, perimenopause, and all of that good stuff. But above all, you guys would be, because these are all achievements that we get through our education, but the depth of her heart, how big she is, how generous she is, that cannot be encompassed through a piece of paper given by an institution. And that's what I want you guys to get from her today. And you will see and hear that through her story and how she expresses herself and the things that she'll articulate. Connie, welcome.
Thank you so much. Wow. I think I should just leave after all. That's quite the intro. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. And you know, the feeling is reciprocated.
100%. I appreciate that. Yes, we are. We have such a deep connection, and I love you as a friend more than you can imagine. And I look up to you. Very, very achieved woman. She has gone through a lot of hardships in her life, some of which we will talk about today. And you guys will see what it takes to really traverse the waters, which are very troubled
and murky, very murky. Yes.
Yes. I've talked to women who have had amicable divorces, and I know everybody aspires. However, that's not the reality, because typically divorces are bitter and angry, and people hold grudges, and it gets, which is why we need laws, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Yes. Because people can't agree. That's right. So tell us, Connie. So I've been divorced since 2012. I was going to say 19 something. My God, I'm dating myself. 2012 was when my divorce. So I've had, I'm 10 years out, 11 now. So I've had a chance to heal. And I know you have too, because you are so at peace. If you want to walk us through, when did your divorce become finalized?
In 2000. So it was quite a while ago. So 22 years ago, not quite 23 yet. So it's been a while. But yeah, I think divorce is always difficult because there's a lot of emotion attached, right?
Absolutely.
And there's an imbalance of that emotion, because I, through my experience, and I'm sure through the majority of experiences, I'm going to say that more than half of the people I know are divorced. It's never, one person isn't as willing to be divorced as the other, right? Right. They're not quite as ready for it. I find that one person in the relationship has already divorced themselves in the relationship. So they're going through the motions. The other person is getting blindsided by this dissolution of a relationship that they weren't quite ready to let go of. Right. So I think that's why it can be acrimonious. I applaud the people that do it amicably, for mm-hmm. sure. My divorce was a little bit unusual.
Because
it started off very amicably. Like when we actually finalized the papers in 2000, it was very amicable. I had what's called the post-divorce divorce.
Oh boy. Tell us about that.
So I was married for about 10 years. Not necessarily happily. I didn't marry my partner. I didn't marry my soulmate. I didn't marry that person or my person. I married because I come from a traditional European family. Right. They liked him. And, you know, he was a good friend for sure. And so just by sort of, it was time to settle down in my head. I did it more to please my parents than it was really for me. So there was more work involved because I wasn't really invested in this marriage to begin with. And I own it completely emotionally. And you know, I don't really want to review the trappings of the marriage. It ended up being, he wasn't my person. I was lonely in my marriage. We just didn't connect. We didn't communicate. Our communication was terrible because we didn't communicate.
My question would be, how did you transition from the friendship into marriage? Because clearly there's a demarcation line. Friendship is sort of what you and I had, except that we have different genders, let's say. And then when you go into the romantic side where feelings become involved, you kind of are in a different realm altogether. Sure. And it has the emotional impact. How did you transition from friendship to that?
Well, we met when I was quite young. We met when I was young. And I was going through a very difficult period at that time, and he was my go-to. So he really helped me get through a very, very, very dark period. And then because of my own passions, I started traveling a lot. I joined Operation Raleigh. So I was in and out of the country constantly. So we kind of started off as boyfriend, girlfriend, but with a very strong undertone of friendship. He was kind of the person I would rely on emotionally. I could talk to him. He really was my support. And in the European community that I was in at the time, you know, it's hard for people to understand what I was experiencing. So to have somebody that I felt safe with was a big deal. Right. So, and my parents loved him, right? He checked all the boxes, right? Portuguese, you know, comes from a good, decent family with the same foundation, the same religious alignments, the same moral alignments. And he was hands down, he was a good man. It's not that he was a bad person at all. But we would constantly break up. So because I would leave and I'd be gone for months at a time. And then it would be once I was actually gone for 2 years at one point. And so I would say, you know, I don't want to hold on to you. So we would break up, right? But amicably. So, you know, I don't want you to feel that you can't meet somebody else. I didn't want to have him feel forced to be in a connection when there was all this distance between us. Then I came back. I was 27 when I came back. Time to settle down. I'd been living a nomadic life for like 10 years, pretty much. So it was time for me to settle down. And I think I connected the settling down with the person who was convenient in my life, which was him. He proposed. Even the proposal was awkward because I didn't really want to say yes. It took me half an hour to say yes in a public place. How bad is that? Poor man. Poor man. So, you know, and then it snowballed, right? Then planning the wedding, you get caught up in the excitement. I kind of felt like I was planning a party, but not planning for marriage. And we just didn't even align with kids, right? I never wanted children. He knew that. And I thought he had accepted that, but that became a bit of a bone of contention. But I think any small thing becomes huge when people aren't happy together. Yes. So we just weren't happy. So it was really convenient, right? It was easy. In terms of, you know, doing all the right things. And my parents' approval was important to me at the time because I, you know, I did so many things they weren't approving of. So it was just, you know, you get caught up in, you know, my parents are happy, so then I'm going to be happy. And then I lived through 10 years of that. And then I finally decided, I was approaching 40 and I thought, nope, can't live an unhappy life. And not just mine, his as well. Because if I'm not invested in it, I'm not doing him any favors either. I'm not serving him in this relationship. So I was very vocal about wanting a divorce. He resisted at the beginning because at that time, especially in our families, we would have been the first couple to be divorced.
Oh, wow.
Right? Yeah. So I was the first divorced person in my family. And also we survived 10 years because we had a million distractions. We were that couple that threw all the parties. We had a large group of friends. We all kind of got engaged at the same time, married at the same time. You know, the others had kids at the same time. So, you know, that flow that happens with the people that, you know, your circle. So we looked like the golden couple, right? Oh, we had good jobs. We had a nice house. We were traveling. So it was a shock to everybody when they came out. But I had finally made the decision, and I was completely inflexible in that decision. I wanted divorce. So surprisingly, he finally conceded and everything seemed fine. We went through the motions, but because it was amicable, and this is probably the biggest advice I give to anybody, don't get caught up in the friendship when it comes to your finances, because it can get messy. Uh-huh. Right? Always, we thought, we kind of did it ourselves, right? We only used a lawyer at the end when we needed, obviously, the official sign off. But, you know, we did the separation, you know, through a separate, we got a separation agreement, went through the paperwork, but things got messy because we were friendly about it. So it was like, well, why are we going to mess with this lovely insurance rate? If we separate our insurance, I'm going to get hit with a higher insurance rate. So will he. We won't get the same discounts. So boom, we left it as is, right? I took over the house because the house had always been my passion, but we didn't officially transfer everything. It was just very messy, very, very messy. And then got messier because obviously being divorced, you start to date. Well, I did anyway. And then it came out that he really thought, you know, long story short, he did the divorce sort of going through the motions, thinking that we would somehow get back together again, that this was a phase I was going through and we would reunite, get married again and live happily ever after. I was just going to work my midlife crisis out of my system. It's pretty much what he thought.
Oh, wow. This is so interesting. So he thought you guys are going to be Liv Taylor and Richard.
Course, because we stayed friends. We celebrated birthdays together. Like we were hanging out together. We stayed friends until I met someone. And then when I met someone, obviously the time was taken away from him. It was, yeah, we're not going to get together like we normally do because I'm seeing somebody else. I'm going to be going out with him and this and that. So it got messy.
Okay.
It got very, very, very messy. So in the interim, and I'm going to be going back and forth, weaving in and out because this was a long time ago. But in our marriage, another big bone of contention was financial control. So he wanted financial control. He thought everything should be joint. And he thought he was the one that should be taking care of the bills in terms of paying the bills and submitting our tax returns and all of that. And to be perfectly honest, there was a point when I was saying, I'm not going to fight over credit cards and bank cards. I'm not fighting over money, right? We're in this together. So that was fine. I gave in and it was what it was. So we had a joint credit cards. I had a bank account. He had a bank account, but I mean, it was transparent. There was nothing to hide. But it was just finances were constantly, we were bickering about him all the time. You know, he felt I was spending too much. I thought he was spending money on the wrong things. It was just going on and on and on. And then he also insisted on submitting all of our tax returns. Okay. My least favorite thing, administratively speaking, is doing my tax returns. So it was an easy, yes, take care of them. But unfortunately, during our amicable divorce, I was at work one day and I had a very good job. No denying. I was second in command. I was a VP of this small IT company. It was a family run business. And the bookkeeper, who was the owner's mom, reached out to me and said, Revenue Canada wants to garnish your wages. And I said, pardon me. I was completely taken aback. And basically, I found out that during our marriage, my then husband had failed to file 6 years worth of my tax returns.
Wow.
So, you know, looking back, shame on me. I take part blame because I should have just, you know, why wasn't I signing documents or following up? But if you can't trust in a marriage, then what? Then what do you have? It's a pretty shaky foundation. So bear in mind, he didn't file his either. I have no idea what he was thinking at the time, but he had not filed our tax returns. So I was hit with a whopping $39,000 tax bill that was accruing interest at 5% a month.
Oh,
not good.
And this is what year is this, Connie?
This was 2000.
So that's like in today's money, that's a lot more.
I don't even want to think about what that would conflate to or inflate to now.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, so that wasn't good. So I contacted him and I was clearly not happy. And during all of this time, the post-divorce happened. So when he finally accepted that we weren't going to be reconciled, and I was seeing somebody quite seriously and committedly at the time, he decided to file a request for a settlement review of our assets. So this is my post-divorce.
Was he able to do that after you guys had already been granted your divorce?
Yes, because it was all very messy. He felt he had a position. You know, he filed whatever papers and didn't help. And I know this is going to sound very biased, but the family court judge that we were standing before was clearly very, very, very misogynistic.
Oh,
I had just built the house. So the house, our matrimonial home, which I had kept and was paying for, I had torn it down and completely renovated it into this brand new, beautiful home that I was the general contractor for. I built it from like foundation to roof. I could tell you where every nail is. I helped put in insulation. I hand selected and handpicked everything in that house.
If I can interject, this is what I mean, you guys. See, I told you she's an amazing, she built a whole house. She was the vice president of a company, superwoman. I'm sorry, Connie, please.
No, that's okay. My cape might be a little bit tarnished, but thank you for that. So he was fine. Like he was part, like he would watch the project unfold and he would give me some suggestions, but he never took ownership of it. It was always, my baby. But then the judge said until it was decided whether or not it was still a matrimonial home, he was allowed to live in the house. Well, I wasn't going to live in the same. Yeah, I wasn't going to live in the same house with him. So I moved out. I moved
of the
out.
The home that you had.
Yes.
Completely. Wow. Yes. Connie.
So I didn't need the awkwardness of us living in this house together. So I moved out. And in the interim, so at that time, if people don't recall, I believe that interest rates were like 8.5% at the time. Okay, for mortgages.
Oh my God.
And so I think my bill was something like $3,000 a month for my mortgage. It was like not pretty. He didn't pay a single penny. He lived there completely free. I was paying all the bills. Then shortly after, I found out about the Canada Revenue Bill. I reached out to him. He started telling me that, I have an accountant taking care of it. And I said, nope. I'm going to take care of it now. So who's the accountant? I went personally to see the accountant. And to be perfectly frank, and again, I'm going to talk about this because this is kind of the societal impact that we live with on a daily. I called the lawyer, the accountant over the phone, and I could tell by the tone of his voice that he thought I was some frivolous, ditzy person trying to scam the government. You could just tell by the tone. He wasn't impressed. Neither would I be. All he sees on paper is somebody who hasn't filed their taxes for 6 years. So I thought, fine, I can deal with this. So I arranged to meet with him. I left right after work. So I was in my corporate gear. I looked professional. I walked in and I said to him, I said, I'm sure you think that I'm trying to scam the government. I said, but I'm going to present this to you. From the minute I started working at the age of 14, 15, until my marriage, every single year has been accounted for. I said, and coincidentally, after my divorce, every single year is accounted for. So why would I pick these random 6 years in my marriage not to file? And because he had not filed, my ex-husband had not filed them either, he sort of saw my argument. And I had come with my boxes, my banker's boxes, all my files to present. I said, let's get to work on this.
And I'm sure, so being as articulate as you were, he kind of realized that.
That helped. That I wasn't some, you know, frivolous person. So he said, great, let's get started. And then I called a few days later asking about the progress. And he tells me that my ex-husband hadn't brought his paperwork with him to the office yet because he couldn't pay the $1,900 accounting bill. So guess who ended up paying that? So I needed things moving. So I paid for that. I called my ex-husband up. I said, it's paid for. Keep moving along. And he had a good job. It wasn't that he didn't have a job. He worked for the government. So it's not like he didn't have a good job. But it was a matter of, this is when the vengefulness comes in, right?
If he's angry,
he's hurt. It's all emotional. It's an emotional, you know, then I'm angry about it. Looking back in retrospect, all these years in between now, I understand the emotion that he was probably feeling at the time, because there's another nail in the coffin of this relationship, right?
Right.
So it got resolved somewhat, but I still owed $19,000.
19 from the 39.
Yes. So it got brought down to 19. So then, and he's still living in the house. Okay.
Where were you living?
I was living with my best friend in Burlington, living with my best friend. I was renting a room from her place because I didn't feel comfortable living there for free. So I was paying her rent. I was paying for all the bills of the house and the mortgage.
God.
So yeah, it wasn't fun. So obviously divorce proceedings we had to go through divorce proceedings again. I had retained a lawyer and I didn't want to lose the house, right? I put my heart into that house. It was my dream home. 3 years and $50,000 later of all the legal bills and he would stall. So every time we'd go before court. So at the time to go to court, just to appear at court was a $1,200 bill, just to sit there. Okay. Never mind all the other stuff involved, you know, with retaining a lawyer. And he would stall. I didn't like my lawyer. I fired my lawyer. I'm waiting to get a new lawyer. I don't have representation. This was 3 years of this constant stalling.
Oh my God.
I know, it was terrible. So, and me paying all the bills, because every time it would be, well, we can't proceed because he says he doesn't have money for a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. So I just wanted things to move along. So finally I did wake up and I realized, you know what, Connie, it's just brick and mortar. It's all it is. It's a house.
Right.
Take away the emotion, just a house. Move on. You can make more money. I sat down, I settled with him. And, you know, I empathize with men who say, oh, women take all my, you know, I don't want to get a divorce, or women just want to take everything. I end up being the loser at the other end, having to give away all my stuff. Well, I know how that feels because I'm the one
who did that.
Who did that? I gave away 85% of my portfolio.
Wow.
Yeah. He had the house. He paid whatever he could afford. He did pay out some of the house, but it wasn't a lot, but it was something. So I thought, okay, I've got this. I needed to end this. I needed that separation. I needed to have him out of my life. But during that time, to pay off the $19,000, this was my life. And I think this is what you were alluding to before.
Yes. So, you guys wait for this. Okay. Wait for this.
So for 3 years, because I wanted to pay this bill down. I hate owing money like this. For 3 years, I had my 8:30 to 5:30 job. My 8:30 to 5:30 job.
As a VP, right?
As a VP. Yep. In the morning, I would train 1 to 2 clients in the morning as a personal trainer. I would then go to my corporate job. At 6 o'clock, I would work at a retail store in the mall nearby so that it would just give me, I could get there in minutes. That was in the evening. Then I would be done at like 9:30, 10 o'clock, I believe. At 11, from 11, 8 p.m. to 2 in the morning, I would clean a building.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like a small business building. And that was my cycle. And then on the weekends, I started, I would train clients on the weekends, work retail, and I started being a cat sitter, dog sitter, and dog walker. So these were my jobs.
This is like what I haven't even kept track. 6 jobs.
So PT, corporate, retail, house cleaning, and then dog walking. So five jobs.
Five jobs. Oh my God.
But the good news is I paid it off. And there was no happier feeling than giving Revenue Canada that final check. Not going to lie. How does this relate back to divorce? We have to recognize, I think, my lesson and the lesson I try to share with other people going through the same thing is understand that you cannot have emotion with finance. It
yes,
has to
that's
be
huge.
You know, you have to be very, very unequivocally dispassionate when you're talking about finances. Okay. And it's hard. You are dividing up shared possessions that have been, you know, have hold memories. There's so many things. Like I remember, and he threw away a lot of the things because he was in the house when I went back to start collecting stuff and separating it because I'd now purchased a house on my own. You know, there were things that he threw away out of spite.
Yeah.
There were things that he did. So I remember walking in one day. So this was towards the end of as we were approaching our divorce. And this is what I mean by emotion. So he knew we were getting divorced. We needed to make decisions. And he was paralyzed. So he didn't want to focus on anything that had to do with the dissolution of our marriage. So what he did instead is, and I remember walking into the house with this and I'm like, oh my God. So the house that I had built, that he was now living in, and I had to go and collect stuff, he had spent, I couldn't even tell you how many days it would have taken. He had gone through every single photo album that we had together. And he had created, I'm not even exaggerating, this collage of photos, and he had paid the money. I don't know how much it would cost to create this canvas, literally a canvas of photo collages. Okay, they're all photos starting from when we first met to our wedding, to our travels, all of it. And it was the size of one entire wall in the great room. So I would say it was easily 12 by 20 feet.
Oh my God.
I'm not even exaggerating. Okay.
Oh my God.
So the money he spent on that instead of like on the bills, but that's what I mean. Like when the emotions take over, yes, rational decisions go out the door.
Yes. I think that's such an important lesson for people to learn. And I was going to ask you about the emotional impact, because you said that when it comes to finances, we have to sort of detach from it as far as emotion mm-hmm. is concerned.
Correct.
But what kind of an emotional impact does it have when you're forced into having to work five jobs to pay the government back for something you didn't even do? Because right. that had to have impacted you.
Of course. I mean, I was angry, and it made me angry towards him for sure. So communication was very, very difficult with us. Communication had always been difficult with us. We were not good communicators with each other. We're very different personalities. I think if people could flash back and see us together, they would not understand the relationship at all, right? Which yes. is, and I didn't either, because if I had understood the relationship, it might have been more successful, but he wasn't my person. So he didn't know how to speak. He didn't know how to talk. You know, we would literally not talk to each other for hours. Like, we could watch a TV program together and there's not a word of conversation shared between us. Which is why I say I was lonely in my marriage, very lonely. So I living the single life in between relationships and on my own, never a lonely moment, truly never lonely, very lonely in my marriage. So the post-divorce was harder for me for a number of reasons, because it was such a shock that we ended things presumably amicably. And then all of a sudden, all of this came up. And created and money can make us ugly, right?
Oh, it does all the time, all the time.
So there was very ugly communication, very angry communication. He would deliberately stall with things that needed to progress because he wanted to make me pay.
Yes.
But here's I'm going to use the word irony. I wanted to be divorced. I didn't want this relationship anymore. I don't regret it. I don't look back with, I don't even look back. And this is the hard part. The fond memories I would have had of the relationship were eradicated by those 3 years of the post-divorce.
Oh,
because
wow,
all
yes.
that anger pretty much almost made me want to wipe out the memories of our marriage.
Yeah.
right? So you create and develop a very selective memory of those things. So, but he refused to attend the in-court proceedings for the divorce because it had to be, the judge had to basically announce that we were done. I showed up with my lawyer. His lawyer showed up. And you'd think I would have this sense of relief, right? Like, oh, it's all done. It's all over. Yes, I mean, I'm still paying the bill, but it's over. I remember as we're approaching the elevator, my lawyer turns to me, who I got to know quite well because we spent 3 years together. he says, okay, it's done. Marriage is over. You're a free woman. And we got into the elevator and I started crying.
Oh, no way. Were you sad?
I started crying.
Was it relief maybe from
it was relief, but it was a sadness that it had come to that. It was a sadness. I think because I'm sure it's a shock that I'm a type A personality, but
yes, it's a big shock.
I hide it so well, but I think it was the sense of failure.
Oh, wow.
Right. That our marriage didn't work. It was a sense of failure. I know. That's what I'm saying.
I'm so surprised to hear you say that, Connie, of all people, because I mean, you kept the house, you renovated it all by yourself, you paid the government back, and you still felt, you worked five
but
jobs.
I felt like I failed in this marriage. Like in my head, it's like, there's a failure. And I think in our lives, I think if you speak to most divorced people, at some point during the divorce or approaching the divorce or post, there's a sense of failure. Like, why didn't this work?
That's true. Right? Why didn't this work?
Yeah. So, you know, it's not something that sits with me now. I don't look back on it as a failure now, but at that moment, I felt like, wow, I cried and it was like, it's over. And I felt the sense of failure. Like, why couldn't I make this work?
So there was that emotional impact, even of the finality of the whole thing.
Absolutely.
When the last nail was put in the coffin, so to speak, and you were able to walk away free and cut all ties. I think, and tell me how you feel about this. Was there an error in the approach of keeping so many connections with keeping the insurance together?
100%. Because not even that, it was complete resolution. Worst mistake you can make. And I will say, if you want to end a relationship, you know, the only problem I can say, it's hard when you have children. See, we were lucky. We didn't have any kids.
Right.
So it was a lot easier in many ways than people who have kids because you're always going to have a connection. Always.
I shudder at the thought of if you guys would have also had kids. Oh my God.
It would have been terrific, like terrible. It would have been horrific to the children.
Yes.
It would not have been pretty. So it's a relief that no child had to suffer that trauma for sure.
Yes. But you absorbed all the trauma. I mean, by and large.
Yeah. And to be fair, so did he.
Of course.
All right. So did he. You know, what he did wasn't nice. He did it out of emotion.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that probably would have been avoided. And number one, if I had just said, okay, we've got to separate everything, as painful as a financial hit might be, and that, oh yeah, I'm going to be paying higher insurance rates, or I'm going to be doing this, or this is going to be the effect of, you know, taking on full ownership of this and taking your name off of that. I should have just done that. Right. You cannot be friends that way. There are certain things you have to share. So when you're divorced with children, obviously there are going to be some shared assets. I completely understand. But friendship and emotion cannot be attached to anything financial. It has to be business. And I will say a lot of that can be avoided if that's applied in the relationship, during the relationship. So what I've learned is next time be on top of it as much as, so if you're going to divide the labor financially, if you're, you know, I hate doing, let's just say I hate doing bills. I hate, you know, taking care of that. You enjoy it. You enjoy being the accountant in the family. Fine. But I reserve the right to check it every month.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course.
And I need to be held accountable to that. But that's what should be done one way or the other. It doesn't matter. It's not saying that one person can't take on the accounting side or the, you know, the disbursement of funds, but there should be an overview allowed by both parties. By no means am I suggesting that every purchase has to be, you know, justified. But at the same time, if budgets are being blown in a relationship, right? The partners have a right to look at them and say, okay, where are we spending this money that we can't afford, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right? So there has to be a meeting of the minds there, and there cannot be in the excuse of, I didn't know. That's the worst. And that's my fault. I should have double checked it. I should have audited. I should have followed up. But when you have the sense of relief and you have the sense of trust, it doesn't mean you can't trust the person. It doesn't mean you can't trust the person. It's like saying to, you know, it's no different than if you receive a paycheck at work, right? The assumption is you're getting paid what you are owed, but you should go back and review your paycheck to make sure that mistakes haven't been made, because mistakes can be made.
Yeah, I think oftentimes people are so distracted and busy. And I'm sure you were probably busy, especially because you did tell us about how many passion projects you were working on prior to your marriage, that you sort of entrusted your significant other, the person you were sharing your life with, which is a very significant dedication and commitment, that he would handle that and he would be on top of it and would have your best interest at heart as well. Because my God, you gave him access to the innermost intimate side of you. You're sharing your life, your space, your heart, everything with him. And he's clearly not sort of, things are not unfolding on his end in line or congruent with how much of an investment you had made into the relationship and into sharing your life with him. So it's important for people to protect their financial interests, even in 100%. Within the constraints of a marriage, when you give people access to something that to many is maybe more important and more valuable. Like, you know, you share your life with them. Life is a big thing. So then the legal considerations have to always be sort of kept at the forefront. And it's so sad that you would have to enter something as this with so many walls up to make sure you protect yourself. But I think it's worth saying that it's probably important from the get-go, in the way that you describe, that you pay attention to some of the red flags or some of the things that would not be fully aligned with what you want out of a marriage or sharing your life with someone. And for you, from what I gathered, and correct me if I'm wrong, would have been proper communication, open channels of communication, perhaps maybe the trust factor, so that you can truly entrust that your significant other. I think your situation sounds very unique in the sense that it all seemed fine. Your family accepted him. Typically, it's the other way around. The family is not very, like it was for me. Yeah. My significant others at the time, my ex-husband, the family did not really accept me into the fold of the family as much as I would have liked to. But the family loved him. You guys were friends. So you felt like you had a great foundation to build a life together on. And then afterwards, everything unraveled. So do we pay attention to how people sort of evolve and grow as individuals throughout the time that we're married to them, so that we can sort of keep abreast of how this is going to impact us?
Mm-hmm. So the first thing we all have to remember is we're not going to be growing and changing at the same rate and at the same time.
Very true.
Different, jobs can change us. It can give us a sense of autonomy and independence. And then that gets reflected or gets introduced into the relationship. So there were a lot of changes. I was definitely going through a lot of changes myself. I wasn't happy to begin with. So that already set a platform in the relationship.
Yes.
Because I wanted out after 3 months, but I stayed for 10 years.
And Connie, another question I was going to ask you, because somebody that I dated told me about the fact that, so this was a guy, obviously. Somebody I dated, that his wife was jealous of his success. So she was a type A personality. Mm-hmm. You were the vice president of a company. So you were very successful in your own right. Type A personality. You had traveled the world and done many great things. So you had checked so many boxes, a lot of achievements under your belt. Did he feel intimidated to be married to someone as strong and as achieved as you?
I would say yes. I would definitely say yes. And he wasn't a fan of a lot of my friends. You know, during our marriage is when I actually started being involved in fitness as a job on top of it. So I was teaching part-time. I started personal training. So yeah, there was a lot, you know, and we didn't have interests that aligned, which did not make it easy. And like you, you know, I had a mother-in-law that did not like me. Mm-hmm. And that was a constant battle. So there are so many moving parts in a relationship.
Exactly.
So many.
Exactly.
And I think that, yes, we have to be in tune to understand. It's hard to say accept the changes in your partner. It's hard because change is hard. Change is uncomfortable regardless. It's just uncomfortable. So, and then as I became more independent and I was able to express myself more freely, just because I found myself, like I found my strength. I was much more vocal. I was very independent in my thinking. I wasn't vying for my parents' approval anymore. I didn't really, it wasn't part of the equation of what I did and what I tried to accomplish. The family dynamic was very hard on his side, very, very hard. And he would constantly, in response, try to control so many other things. Right. So where he felt he was losing control of me, he tried to exercise control in other ways, one of them financially. Right. So those are the things you have to watch for is, you know, I was emotionally too immature. I think I wasn't invested in the relationship and I own that. When you're not invested in something, how much effort are you really going to put into it? I gave what I had. So do I feel like I gave what everything I did? I gave what I had, what the capacity that I had to give right. in a relationship that I didn't want to be in is going to be, it's not going to be the same as what somebody's going to give in a relationship that they're full in. Like they're all into this relationship. I was not all in. Right. So I worked around the relationship. Right. So here we are in this relationship where he feels like I'm constantly moving. I'm never in one place. Right. So am I part to blame for the failure of the relationship? Absolutely.
It was probably difficult for him to keep up with you because you were constantly
absolutely challenging.
And he
was in a government job where the mentality is so different. There's a sense of complacency being in a government job. And right. he was an inveterate procrastinator. And he had this job since he was out of university. So he didn't have ambition. Mm. He was happy in his job. He was set for life. That's not my mentality. Right. I've always been more entrepreneurial. I've always, I've gone against the grain in many ways. So, it wasn't easy for him either. Right. Being with somebody that he felt he couldn't pin down. And so I think in a relationship, you have to act as a partner. So if you feel like the one being left out, you need to communicate that. If you feel like you don't understand the changes that you see in your partner, you have to talk about it.
Yes.
We are in this place. We're always afraid to offend and I think honestly, the reason communication is a problem in the majority of relationships. And I mean, that's probably a blanket statement, but in the majority of relationships is because we're fearful of losing the relationship.
So we compromise,
and we do this a lot, right? If I don't see it, it's not happening.
Yeah.
And then we get blind, or we feel that we get blindsided. Were we really blindsided? No. And maybe in the future, we'll do a podcast on super toxic relationships, because then I went later on into a terribly toxic relationship, but even in relationships, in any relationship, be it a marriage, be it a long-term relationship, I am guilty of taking red flags, creating a bouquet out of them, putting them in a vase and adding water. Right? So we cannot do that, right? We cannot do that. It's we need to, and if your communication and your sense of self just ruins the relationship or causes the relationship to dissolve, then that's probably not the relationship for you. That's not to say you shouldn't work on it at all. I'm a big believer in love languages.
Yes.
Right. I'm the person for me. Acts of service, right? All about acts of service.
Yeah.
So if somebody does, brings me a cup of coffee that I didn't even ask for, does something, unsolicited, I'm that to me means more than an extravagant, bouquet of flowers or, a watch. Do you know what I mean? It's like gifts are lovely, but those acts of service mean everything to me.
Yes.
And he was not a person like that.
So this is a great segue because I really wanted to touch on the dating aspect of it, of course, post-divorce, because most people, and this is like such a It's such a vast topic in and of itself, because a lot of times people sort of rush to dating. Sometimes people wait forever. Some people don't want to go anywhere near the opposite sex for the rest of their life. And do we go into that, or do you feel like you went into it with complete self-awareness of, because I know that I did that and it actually worked against me to some degree, where I said, well, now I know what I'm going to accept and what I'm not going to accept, having learned X, Y, and Z from my marriage, or my, you know, the end of my marriage, and the way that he had treated me, or some of the things that, let's say, he lacked, or some of the things that I had done that I wasn't proud of. How do you navigate the dating scene after divorce? Because to talk about the love languages, I dated somebody whose idea of love languages was gifts. And I could care less. I wanted to, because I remember what triggered this thought is when you talked about how the house was brick and mortar. He gave me this extravagant bracelet, which was like so expensive. And I looked at it as just metal. And all I wanted was just his time. I'm like, you know, spend time with me. Show me that you're investing in me. Yeah. Not that. And he was like a CEO. And I'm like, he probably got his assistant to buy this for me. And then he presented it to me. So the investment on his part was so little in that regard, but financially high. So to him, that's what mattered, the financial investment, which is fine. That's his love language, but certainly wasn't mine. And so that incongruency did not sort of bring us closer. If anything, and he was so baffled by the fact that I was not so swept off my feet by this extravagant piece of jewelry and what it must have meant to him.
Yeah.
So how did you navigate the dating scene after the divorce? And what are some of the things to consider when you enter into a new relationship that you can sort of advise people on right now?
Well, I think most, I'm going to say most women newly divorced, and men for that matter. I'm not going to lie. And again, I say this without regret, but we didn't have a very satisfying sexual relationship.
Yeah.
I was his first.
Oh.
I was his first. Okay. So, yes. And that was fine, right? I mean, we knew what we knew at that point. But so was I probably, did I err on the side of promiscuity in the first 2 years after my divorce? I'm going to say yes. But I think most of us can say we dive into the dating scene really quickly for the most part because we want to feel validated again.
Yes.
Right. You want to feel validated. So I felt, you know, I felt attractive. I felt desired. I felt acknowledged. I felt noticed, you know? So of course you fall into that right away. So those are the things that we need, right? That fill our soul, right? So it was all about me.
Yes.
Right. And I think initially in the dating scene, it's not about the other person. It's about me. What can I get from it? Right. So I would just, you know, of course I was, you know, seeing this person, that person. I also got into sort of other activities like adventure racing. So I started to meet like-minded people, right?
Yes.
And I enjoyed myself. But I think that's what happens. We go in with a sense of mistrust, but we go in with a more selfish attitude. And that's okay. That's by no means, you know, a bad thing. It's about finding yourself. Who do I resonate with? Who resonates with me, right? You become more exploratory.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because now you're visiting this like breadth and depth of, and for me, males that are completely different than the person I was married to. Right. I went in obviously with more caution financially. I did not want to move in with anybody. I didn't want a relationship that I knew.
Yeah.
I did not want a relationship. I did not want to relinquish executive decision-making control. I did not want to do that. So that pretty much defined who I was seeing in the dating, because I didn't want to have a long-term relationship at the time. So as soon as somebody wanted that, it would be, next, because it's not what I wanted at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we take what we wanted to avoid in the previous relationship, or we go the complete 180 from the relationship we left, right? To see if that's where we want to be. And sometimes it's somewhere in the middle, right? But I think there was a sense of distrust for sure, right? Yeah. We take the emotion we had at the end of the relationship and take it into the new relationships, right? Be them, you know, one night stands or be them long term, but we do take that, right? And so the other person, it's difficult to navigate. Now, the dating scene then in 2000, completely different than the dating scene now.
Oh God, yes.
Like so different.
Yes.
And it's sad.
Of course.
It's sad because the next relationship I went into that was more long term, that lasted 5 years, we met in a Shopper's Drug Mart. People weren't afraid to talk to each other.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it was just a conversation that started, and then I gave him my business card, and then we just started talking, and, you know, and there's more interaction. It wasn't about texting. It was actual voice interaction.
Yes.
You got to hear the person. Moving forward, obviously to the more current times, this.
Yeah, the phone, the device, Tinder.
It's all about texting.
Dating, and yeah.
It's taken away from a lot of human interaction.
Very true.
It's become overly sexualized. And I'm not a prude by any stretch of the imagination, but to me, a relationship has to be a balance of emotion, feeling, sexuality, obviously, and an intellectual aspect as well, right? Because let's, like, when we get into our 80s and we have a busted hip and sex isn't quite as painless as it used to be, you got to be able to laugh with the person and talk with the person and enjoy their company outside of that, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm all for, like, that sexual chemistry is fantastic, but it's not long-term.
Right.
Right? It's not long-term.
It's not. And it's so important, I think, that you go into the next relationship completely self-aware of what you want, what you don't want, and also be able to pick up on some of the red flags that you talked about, how you love to collect them and put them in a vase and then add water so that they could flourish. Yeah. And so you could be able to pick up on those red flags from the other individual and how you navigate those waters. Because the way I look at it is, how many congruencies do we have? As we evolve, as we grow, as we become the next best version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes people that stagnate and end up being with somebody who's a person who really dedicates themselves to their growth and self-development, the incongruencies arise immediately.
Oh, for sure. And they're death to the relationship.
Exactly. Right? Absolutely death to the relationship. So that's why there's such hesitation now. I think that's why the dating world has become what it has become, because there's that hesitation to invest in people because you don't know some of these factors and where they are. And of course, when you introduce technology to it, it's so easy to send a text that has almost zero emotion on a screen. And you don't have, because I've done this with some people, do they have the strength of character to say some of the things they say to you on a text, face to face, looking you in the eyes? And you could pick up on so much of how uncomfortable they are. So it's like, well, my dear one, you are not as strong as you think you are. Mm-hmm. And you are definitely not as brave as you think you are.
Right.
Because if you were, you would have no problem to say exactly what you said on a text to me face to face with strength in your voice, looking at me right in the eyes to speak your truth, because that's your truth. So there's a lot of that. So that's why that builds on the hesitation. Like, why should I invest in these people? But having said that, I also know people that met on Tinder and got married.
Oh, yeah. By no means am I saying that there's not a success story, right? Now, the question is, how long did they stay married? That's the question. But
yes, that's fair.
Not to be cynical, but in all honesty, we have a much more disposable mentality. So a perfect example. I was in this relationship. I wasn't quite happy. That doesn't make me a saint. Doesn't make me a martyr. I wasn't happy, but I tried.
Yes,
I tried. I didn't just give up. Mm-hmm. Right now, divorce has become so much more accessible. Marriage in and of itself, it has changed. It's not, you know, you can live together and be common law, still share some of the same benefits, if you will, of marriage without necessarily the hardcore commitment, right? It's a big deal to get, in the past was a big deal to get divorced. It was a huge decision. There was a huge impact. It's not the same anymore, right? It's much easier to get divorced. And it's because it's so much more accepted And again, by no means am I saying that shouldn't be the case, but nobody blinks twice. I mean, I was ostracized from my family for 3 years after I got divorced, right? So because it was a huge impact, the shame, the blah, blah, you know, whatever, all of that, right? You know, my dad, we have a great relationship, but he has said to me not that long ago, he says, I can't see you as a divorced woman. You'll always be a married woman. You were married and it was for life and that was it. And I respect what he says. I get it. I don't agree, but I understand. So when I tried to introduce a boyfriend, it was like, oh, I can't, you know, it was beyond the scope for him. Right.
Oh boy.
But yeah. We have such a disposable mentality. Number one, relationships are disposable, right? The grass is always greener, but I always like to remind people, sometimes the grass is greener on the other side because it's fertilized with bullshit. Right. And we maybe should spend more time fertilizing our own grass to get it as green. Right. But that same sense of commitment and investment, I feel, isn't there anymore. The other part too is...
I'd like to take a quick break now to let you know that today's show is sponsored by my book, Against Medical Advice. This book is a memoir and it tells the story of how I built my life back after suffering a stroke during my divorce. I discuss the nutritional, lifestyle, and mindset aspects that I put into practice to regain my health and rebuild my life. The book has been a labor of love, both writing it and publishing it, and I couldn't be more proud of it. Please pick up your copy from Amazon. For your very own signed copy, my email address is simone@simonegisondi.com. Oh, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd please consider leaving a review once you've read the book. And now, back to the show.
So you have this online dating, and especially as women, and I'm sure men, I mean, if I've taken myself off the dating online for now because I'm focused on other things. But when I was on the dating sites up to not too long ago, I was inundated, right? Oh, yes. Like, I mean, text after text and you know, and like after like after like after like. So should I be that person? I go on a date. I connect with the person. We have a great first date. Probably going to be a second. But I could go home. And just continue to look on the dating app. Yes. If I found this good guy, can I find better? There's that mentality, right? Whereas before there was, let's give this a shot. Forget about the other distraction. Let's give this a shot, right? And see if it goes somewhere. So there's that sense of commitment to the process, not commitment to the person, but to the process to see if you will commit to the person. And I find now that we have dating ADD. Right? We have this Google mentality of like, you know, if I don't get what I want, my gratification in 6 seconds, next, right? Onto the new search. And that I think is the problem with dating now. In my view, and this is my personal experience, is that there's that, yeah, you're great, but now I think I can find better. Mm-hmm. Because there's 100 more people waiting to hear from me, right? And then go ahead.
I actually think I'm guilty of that. It was the dopamine hit of like, if you, let's say, want to, and I did this in other areas of my life, instead of dedicating yourself to, and I did this in school, instead of dedicating myself to studying one thing, I was like, oh, but I really want to, like, this sounds so interesting. And then it would be like shiny objects on that side, and I would look at it and I would get the dopamine hit that, oh, it feels so good to pursue something else. Yes. And how good it feels to know that I'm going to learn something else. And then I find another thing and it would be like another hit of dopamine. And then I got addicted to the dopamine hit. And it was like, okay, now I really enjoy just the chase of each next thing. It's like, well, I really like this course and I like this course and I should get a degree in this. And perhaps I should do this. Oh my God, I could become this. And it was dopamine, 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 and nothing really, I didn't stick with something in particular. And then I saw how that could actually very easily blur into your other areas of your life. Yeah. Oh, and that's dangerous.
It is, because we're in a society now where there's no sense of delayed gratification, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's got to be work and effort put into it. And I think being the age that I am, being where I am in life, I, you know, you as well, you know, you come from a generation as well of like, there's a work ethic, there's an integrity to the process that we need to employ. And I find, and it's okay if you just want to date. I think people need to recognize that. If I just want to date, that's okay then, as long as I'm true to myself, right? Forget about the other person. I'm obviously not going to mislead the other person, but I'm true to the process. I just want to date. I just want to see a bunch of different people, you know, enjoy, you know, the fun part of that initial, you know, like the relationship as it cycles, right? You know, initially it's all about, you know, that you I find you funny. I find you attractive, you know, like that honeymoon phase, right?
Yes.
But I don't want to get into the real part of the phase, and that's okay. I don't want to get into the meat and potatoes of the relationship. That's totally okay. It's not okay if I complain that I can't, that I don't have a relationship and I can't find a relationship if I'm not willing to invest in getting the relationship. It's not just going to fall into my lap. It's going to take time to unfold. And if I'm not going to give it the time that it needs, then I have no one to blame but myself.
Yes.
Right? If I don't give the time. Now, that's one side. There's the other person. If the other person is in a dating only phase, right? Then I need to just say, okay, then this is not the person for me. I can't force that person to think relationship like I am.
Yeah. Right? And I think that that's important in exactly what you said at the beginning, how important it is to have the lines of communication open. So you communicate what you want, the person communicates what they want. You see if there's congruency and alignment. And if there isn't, then you don't sit there and try to force something to work, much like, let's say, you did with your marriage. And it just ended spectacularly.
Epic fail. Epic fail. For
yes.
Sure. But, and you learn, but you know, it's a matter of learning. But I think,
yes.
You know, if we're going to talk just to dabble on, because I know the topic is divorce, but divorce and dating, I mean, a lot of dating processes get impacted by our divorces, right? Because, you know, it's, you know, whatever happened in our relationship, you made a valid point in that, you know, you go into the next relationship or into the dating scene, knowing what you want or don't want. I don't know if we actually know what we want, but we certainly know what we don't want. We know what our non-negotiables are, and we have to be authentic and true to those non-negotiables. So I am true to the non-negotiables. I can't honestly say I know what I want because I don't know, right? I don't know because we go into the dating site now where it's all about, and I don't care what people say, looks matter in that you have to be attracted to the person that you see.
100%.
I do not, I'm going to be completely candid. I do not swipe right on people I don't find immediately attractive in the picture, right?
That's right.
And that already opens up a can of worms because how authentic is the picture? How real is the picture?
Oh, yes.
The picture, all of that, right? I mean, I'll give you that quick story. I think I've shared it with you, but I remember, you know, meeting somebody and we have finally agreed to meet in person. And of course, it seems that the height of most males, of the average male on the dating apps is 5'10", right?
Okay. Yeah.
So there he is, he's 5'10", blah, blah. And I'm a short girl, I'm vertically challenged for sure, but I wear heels. And so I don't necessarily want to date a short man. That's just my preference, right?
Yeah.
Am I shortchanging myself? Potentially, who knows? But I remember going to the bar and waiting, and then this individual walks towards me and he's 5'4". So my first comment to him was, where's the rest of you? Because I'm expecting
somebody. You said
somebody,
that?
I said that because I'm expecting somebody who's 5'10". And then he looks at me and he says, well, you know, if I put down my real height, you know, you wouldn't be interested. And I said, yes, I wouldn't be interested, but now I'm not interested in you at all because you're a liar and you're not even a good one.
That's
so,
right.
So it's just, you know, this is such an obvious lie that's going to unfold in sooner than later. So right away, there's zero trust, right?
What's scary, is that he thought that the lie would just be forgotten and there is actually potential for
well,
you to.
That's the thing, you know, if he had disclosed it, you know, I would have had more respect. He had said, you know, hey,
exactly.
We're talking and said, by the way, you know, I kind of embellished on the dating app. I'm actually 5'4", right? But to just surprise me that way, just all of a sudden, you know, that's where I've started learning from my red flags. But same thing goes with men. I remember dating men and they would complain that they were attracting a certain type of woman who only, you know, seemed to be interested in their possessions. But then my comment to them was, have you looked at what you've put in your dating profile? All you see are your cars, your motorcycles, your boats, your lovely kitchen. So if that's what you're going to, if that's your first foot forward is about your things, then you're going to get people who are interested in your things.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You have to, and I think that's where dating profiles need to be more authentic. Step forward, your first foot forward should be with the things that are important to you. And I'm not saying you have to get, you know, metaphysical and completely spiritual, but, and you know, you don't have to talk about your non-negotiables. You can allude to them, but that's a negative stance. Try to be positive about things, but be true, right? So for me, if you looked at my profile, it's about my dogs and about outdoor life, because that's my life. So if you're a person who just wants to sit on a couch or doesn't like animals, we are not going to align.
That's right.
Right. So the things that are important to me, I'll put forward.
Right. So important to be authentic, to really present yourself to the world and exactly with authenticity and exactly who you are, and to be the person of integrity that you want the world to see you as, and the person that you want to attract in return.
Well, and what do you want them to be attracted to? Do you want them to be attracted to your lifestyle? If you want somebody to share your lifestyle with, then you need to be forward about that. Right? Not hide it and then present something different and then be, and then complain that that's the person you attracted was the person attracted to what you presented in the profile.
That's right.
Right. So, and it's, and that's a constant thing. We get caught up in the pictures. We get caught up in the filters. We get caught up in the, you know, the little short reels of our life that are all positive. Nobody's gonna put anything negative. Yes. Right. And not suggesting they should, you know, I'm never going to put forward that, you know, I can have a pretty bad temper. So beware. That's something they're going to learn probably the hard way, but
there has to be a little bit that you have to sort of keep to yourself, and people have to explore the relationship, they have to explore you as the person that they're undertaking a relationship with. So that's, those are some things do have to be explored. So as far as the dating, the dating world is a jungle, and I fear going into it.
Oh, it's not a jungle. It's a swamp.
Swamp. It's a swamp. Okay. It's a swampy jungle where anacondas like lie dormant, try to make sure that they get their next prey when the time is right.
Yes,
oh, thank
yes.
you. But Connie, what about rebuilding? Because clearly your divorce was probably one of the most horrible ones, especially that forced you to work 5 jobs, and you had to sort of bring so many things back to balance. And thank you for everything you shared so that people know some of the things that could potentially rise in their respective marriages mm-hmm. that they should be cognizant of and know what they can or cannot do about that. What about rebuilding? How did you rebuild yourself back up? Because you gave a lot. I mean, working 5 jobs, paying back the government, losing the house, rebuilding yourself, not just financially and, you know, with things that you possess, but also yourself as the person.
Well, the nice thing about finally being on my own is I was able to dedicate myself to expanding on what I truly loved. So I embraced being single again because I liked making decisions for myself. Right. I didn't feel like, oh my God, now who am I going to find? So the number one thing is I wasn't looking to be a dependent again. And when I say dependent, I mean, we are dependent on each other in a relationship, right? I didn't want to compromise with anybody anymore. I didn't want to have to discuss a decision to make sure that we both were on board. I'm on board with my own decisions. So it allowed me to really spread my wings. So, you know, I loved what I did. I worked hard. Once I paid off the debt, obviously, I'll tell you, in my marriage and then using it as a source of income after, I obviously, that's where I got my continued passion to become a personal trainer, right? So I was ready now to dedicate my time to that. I realized I didn't really want the corporate world anymore. I wanted to be more entrepreneurial. I wanted to exercise my passion, use my education for that. So that was a bonus because I knew what the struggle was going to be to become self-employed, and I didn't have to burden someone else with it, right? And so I was able to plan my life and say, okay, the first thing I wanted to do, obviously, was I didn't want to live with somebody else, not even my best friend, as much as I loved her. I wanted to find my own place. So I used my money towards that, and investing in real estate is never really going to be a mistake. So I did that. Then I just started to factor in, what can I do to support my dream of becoming self-employed, right? So I found a job. It ended up being recruiting and I enjoyed it, but it just happened to be, it was local. It allowed me the flexibility of training before and after work and on weekends because I didn't have to do anything outside those 9 to 5 hours, right? Didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to work on the weekend for my job. It was a job and I liked it, but it was a job. And then slowly I was ready to make the decision to go completely self-employed. And it was a struggle, but when you're used to struggle, it doesn't matter. So I had to wait to get more and more clients on board. I had to finally plunge, right? Take the plunge and say, okay, I don't necessarily have enough clients to equate to my full-time salary, right? But I'm not going to be able to do that because I only have so many hours in the day. So I'm going to have to either go all in or continue doing it part-time. I started to go all in, worked on it through financially, but it allowed me to educate myself more, learn more, focus on getting those referrals. When you can't do anything half-assed. You cannot do anything 50%. So for me to get the referrals that I wanted with my clients, I needed to go all in, share that passion with them so that they then spread that on to somebody else, right? If I stayed with my full-time job and they said, I have two clients, two people, friends I'd like to refer to you, where am I going to fit them in? I'd have to say no. So That's when you have to kind of take the plunge and say, okay, let's hope that the universe aligns, that the stars align for you, and you're going to start getting those referrals. And I did, right? I invested in it. I did what I needed to do. I found cost-saving measures. And you know what? I just dialed down my life. And that's what we have to be prepared to do sometimes, is dial down your life. I think a lot of people leave with the expectations that they're going to maintain the same lifestyle they had when they had a second income in the family.
Yes.
Right? Okay. And that's not realistic necessarily, unless you were the primary wage earner and you weren't relying on that second income. Right. But when you have two incomes, it does make decisions a lot easier.
Absolutely.
Right? So knowing that I'm a single income person, I dialed my life down to accommodate that. And I was okay with that. I mean, if you saw the cars I drove then, it was like, I found one car, no word of a lie. I was actually with somebody at the time and we were just dating, but and I loved going to garage sales, loved them. I lived in Oakville, loved every Saturday morning do garage sales. And I found a car, $500 sitting there. My friend was the boyfriend at the time was handy with cars. He tinkered around, brought it all up to speed. And I had that car for 3 years, I think, for $500. You just learn.
Wow.
Yeah. Mind you, it was an older car. Was it a glamorous car? No. But again, it really depends on where you're going to put the emphasis.
That's true.
Right. So some people want to continue presenting the lifestyle they had when they were married. Right. And they'll present it in any way they can and their priorities shift. Right. So they may gain, they may lose. I don't know. Who am I to judge them? But that's their decision. I'm like you. I'm not about stuff.
I like the fact, I think that's probably one of the most important financial pieces of advice I've heard. Dial down your life so that you can accommodate supporting yourself within your means and within what you are earning for yourself. Yeah. So you have to sort of take account of all of that to be able to remain financially sound going forward by yourself in your new life, especially if you are, because there are many women who are stay-at-home moms. They get divorced and then they have to enter the workforce. And So it's a whole new beginning. It's a whole new life where you have to really take account and be able to design your new life. So honey, I wanted to ask you this because you touched on so many things and I'm so curious to hear what you have to say about it and what you would identify. What stands out the most to you about your divorce?
About the divorce itself?
I mean, you had two divorces. But yes, I guess that overall sort of...
I think what stood out most, I think, for the divorce was the financial hit, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, you know, to be perfectly transparent, you know, when I had to rebuild my life, by the time all my expenses were paid, and this was a dial-down life, but I had to build everything again. I mean, there were weeks when I was like, if I had $20 for groceries left over. Right. So this is going to sound almost oxymoronic, but my divorce made me so strong.
Oh, yes.
It made me so strong and it made me realize I can pretty much accomplish anything I want. And that's the thing. It's that I want. I could accomplish anything, but that's what I'm thankful for. Because I don't think if I'd stayed married, that ever realization would ever have happened, right? Mm-hmm. I would never have to have dug as deep as I had to see the resilience that I actually have in the face of struggle, right? So for me, that I'm thankful for that. I am. I'm thankful. For me, I took a lot of steps that some people might think, oh, you know, it's not that big a deal. But getting divorced at all was a big decision for me. because I knew the backlash with my family. I knew the perceptions
yes.
that would exist. I knew the consequences I'd have to pay with my family. The financial consequence was not anywhere as important to me at the time, because it was also amicable at the time, the first part, as the ramifications with the family, right? The consequences with the family, like not being able to, not going to weddings, because if I went, my parents wouldn't. So I just decided to not go. You know, splitting up friends, that's another topic for another day. The splitting up of friends and your social circle as a result of a divorce is enormous.
So true.
And very impactful. So I had to rebuild everything. I built up a circle of new friends. I built up, you know, I built a better relationship with my family, not for anything. But see, these are the things I actually have gratitude for. My relationship with my parents is stronger than it ever was, because we actually got to see each other instead of hiding behind religious precepts, cultural precepts. We actually saw each other. My dad saw me. I saw my dad. My mom saw me. We treat each other like people. Even my dad now sees how resilient I am, and he's proud of me. Mm-hmm. He's proud of what I've accomplished.
And right? I actually, that's exactly what I love about you and why I admire you so much, because you are the epitome of strength, especially for a woman, because I know that typically societal norms tell us that men are the strong ones and women are the weak ones. We're the weak sex and so on and so forth. But not only for the fact that you were able to withstand the divorce, but that you were able to build back, especially in light of the fact that we see a lot of people turn to escapisms. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of people turn to addictions to be able mm-hmm. to cope and to be able to navigate the waters of the transition towards being free. A lot of people can't even fathom the idea of standing on their own two feet when the whole time they were married to someone, that individual was a source of their energy. They would suck the energy, much like what I think from what you explained, your ex-husband was doing with you. You were the source of energy for him. And so it's important that people kind of understand some of the things that clearly you have a knack for, because naturally all of these things you applied to be able to build yourself back up, to remain standing, to not be taken down by anything destructive such as an addiction or anything like that. You turn to the healthy lifestyle. I think you talked about the fact that you used exercise as a way to build yourself back up. You have that lifestyle now. I know that. And not only that, but obviously you presented a new version of yourself to your friends and to your family. And it's an admirable, amazing, you are an amazing person. I mean, aside from the fact that you're a woman, just an amazing person.
Thank you. But I think, you know, I think everyone is. Anybody who survives divorce, in all honesty, anybody who survives divorce, it doesn't really matter. Like for me, it was a huge financial hit. The emotional side for me was very little, because in all honesty, I'm that person. I was already divorced from him.
Yes.
Right. I wasn't invested. So the dissolution of the marriage was just, I was going through the motions of what I had already emotionally done. Right. That was the hardest part for him. Right. For me, it was the post-divorce, all the financial stuff afterwards. But again, my bad, right? Poor planning. So you learn from that. You definitely learn from that. So, but I applaud anybody who's had to go through a divorce, because there's so many layers to that. I mean, you know, very few people, I won't say no, but in general, people don't go into a marriage thinking, oh, it's going to end, right? You go into it thinking it's going to be forever, right?
That's right.
So to take that hit after is very hard, right? I feel for people who were encouraged, forced to live more dependently on their partner, okay? Mm-hmm. Because that's not easy, because you think it's a benefit. And then when you are forced to go out on your own, it's a very, very, very difficult transition.
It is.
And it's not because they're weak. It's like anything. If you're used to eating every day and then all of a sudden you have no food, it's a very difficult transition. They're not weak. They just didn't know what that lifestyle was like. They never had to go without. So mm-hmm. the same thing with any person, male or female, who has to go through that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Women, when you have kids, and not to take away from the men, but it's primarily women who have primary custody. Yes, legally, whatever. But how difficult a life is that when you have to play mom and dad to your children, right?
Right.
Because you have to kind of fill that deficit, that void of the other parent, because the other parent's only there part-time. And it could be vice versa, but we know that primarily it's the mom that has primary custody. None of that is easy. Divorce is not easy on any level. Divorce can be easy financially. Emotionally, it's probably not. There are very few divorces that don't take their toll on a person or have an impact on a person. So did my divorce have an impact? Yes. Am I grateful for it? Yes, I'm grateful for honestly any relationship I had because I learned from it. Right? I learned from it, and slowly but surely I begin to learn more and more what I want. But leaving my divorce, I walked into relationships that probably I shouldn't have, right? Because I knew what I didn't want, but I didn't quite know what I wanted.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't quite know. I thought I knew what I wanted. So for example, I mean, and you're in the same industry on many levels, you know, my lifestyle and the gym and everything else is very important to me. So when you present that on your dating profile, who are you going to attract? People from the gym, right? And to be perfectly honest, and I fell into that trap, don't want to date a bodybuilder ever again.
Oh, yes.
Right? Like, because you're taking on so many different issues, right? But I thought that's what I wanted, right?
Yeah.
I thought that's what I wanted, and it's not what I want.
Yeah.
Now I know what I want is just someone who can accept my lifestyle of going to the gym and that being a big part of my life and prepping food and eating in a relatively disciplined fashion in my way, right? So I know what I don't want is somebody who's going to sit on the couch all day. Right. I don't care if they go to the gym with me or not. Not a requirement at all. But they've got to want to walk the dogs with me, go on trails, go on hikes, spend time outdoors. That they have to want.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
They can watch Sunday sports on the couch. I don't care.
Yeah.
Right. As long as that's not the only way that they indulge in activity.
That's right.
Right. So now I know what I want now. But this is fast forward how many years later? Right. It's a long process. Because
that's
number
right.
The first thing you want to do is find the opposite of what you were married to, right?
Yeah.
For the most part. But sometimes the opposite is not what you really want either.
I think that when you become a new person, having grown and evolved after post-divorce, you have to be very self-aware in that moment when you're going to be sort of seeking to be in another relationship. Yeah. Who am I now? At this point and at this juncture, having gone through all of that, what do I want from myself, from the relationship, from the other person? So it's so multi-layered and multi-nuanced that it's, I don't believe that there's a catch-all anything or an umbrella kind of a statement
right.
that anybody can make because
that's
each,
exactly right.
Yeah, because each individual is unique, because each situation is unique, because each person brings something unique to the table. Every divorce is unique. I had a stroke in the middle of it. I mean, I don't know. Not many people go through that. So that was unique to me.
Yeah. We have to turn this podcast around one day and talk about your situation.
Oh, yes.
That's huge. I mean, you talk about mine, my struggles and what I had to go through. What you have to go through, Simone, is so unique and so inspiring in that how you recovered from that and to be the person that you are today that we're actually looking at right now. It's amazing. That story needs to be shared. I know you've written a book and I think it's fantastic. You've written a book, but seriously, that podcast has to be done where you have to share your story one day.
I so appreciate that, Connie. And I promise I will do that. If you would love to come on the mic with me again and we can just chat,
yes.
I would love that. Absolutely. Yes, the point I was trying to make is that mine was unique in that sense, but my God, you had a post-divorce from the divorce and you had to pay the government back, God knows, gazillions of dollars and had to work five jobs. I didn't have to go through that. I was in, you know, the hospital. I had to build my health back up. I had lost every single aspect of life. I lost my family, my marriage, my job, my health. There was not one single thing was left. I had to rebuild everything from scratch.
That's crazy.
But
one thing I learned is money is just money.
Exactly.
You can always make money. That's
exactly.
One thing I learned. So that's why I don't place as much importance on money. I've had a lot, I've had very little. And so
yes.
I'm okay. You know what? I'm okay with what I have now. I'm more than okay with what I have now. But in your situation, health is our primary wealth. When you don't have your health,
100%.
nothing else matters.
It
doesn't matter what you have in the garage. It doesn't matter how
yes.
big your house is. It doesn't really matter how many shoes you have in your closet and purses. It doesn't matter if you don't have your health. So that's why your story that you're here now to be able to tell that story is far more inspirational and aspirational than just talking about money. I learned that it was a great lesson in life. Money is just money. You can make money again. And I did.
That's right. True.
Yeah. All great. But your story in its uniqueness is the fact that, yes, you had nothing around you. And look at the woman we see now.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, Connie. That's what makes you so amazing, because you're so generous, even with your compliments. And I really appreciate you saying that. But I think that we have to recognize that everybody has to really build back from scratch, yes, because they build themselves as a person, and then a new life. You have to really build a new life, and you have to navigate the waters, with bruises and scars and emotions, things that will always be part of your fabric and who you are. And I think that there's nothing, I don't look at myself as being so much more, oh my goodness, I nearly died. I had a stroke. So I'm so much more important. My divorce was so much better than yours, or my story is so much better than yours. But I think that the fact that people who did not turn to escapisms and anything to that they get addicted to. And I personally know individuals in my life who have gone down that path.
Yes, me too.
And it is so, so destructive. And it's so sad, because you get to see the impact it has on the children that are involved in those situations where there are children. You see the destruction unfolding with the person that you maybe on some level care about, and you watch it not being able to do anything, and it affects you. I know it affects me watching people self-destruct in front of my eyes. So I think that just the fact that you are able to navigate through the waters of divorce and come out on the other side, and you're not addicted, and you haven't turned to any escapisms, and you're still able to go into the workforce and be able to make your own money and feed your children, you've achieved a lot. A lot.
Thank you. Thank you.
So it's so, so important. But my last question.
Sure.
And I can't wait to hear your answer on this one. How do you want to be remembered by your ex-husband?
How do I want to be remembered by my ex? That's a loaded question, only because I don't miss him. So I don't spend a lot of thoughts on him at all. Mm-hmm. Really, the only time he comes up is if anybody ever asks about, sort of my previous relationships. But how do I want to be remembered by him? I want to be remembered by him as, I think what was important to me, as the supportive and strong partner that I was, because I struggled a lot with his mother. I did, to the point where I remember asking him, like, I don't know who the mother or who the wife is anymore, because she was always forcing her way into our relationship and taking him over all the time. So I think he lost sight of the fact that I was on his side, right? And that I want him to remember me as the supportive partner that I was at the time.
And I hope that if he's been able to watch you as you built yourself back up post-divorce, especially knowing that he put you in the hole with the government and you had to go above and beyond and work 5 jobs to be able to pay back a debt that was clearly his mistake, and be able to see how you flourished. You built your real estate portfolio. You have your shit together. You're kicking ass. You're doing really great. You've been able to move forward, especially in the face of the adversity that he placed in front of you. I hope he gets to see that, and to see that you are the most exemplary woman that has been able to overcome. From being the vice president, high corporate job, to, being humbled to go and clean buildings to be able to pay back a debt that he created. You are one of the most amazing human beings on the face of planet Earth. So I hope he sees that.
Well, I'll, just to throw a little nugget in, I'm not going to expand on it too much, but he pretty much stalked me for 12 years after our divorce.
Actually, you know what? It's so funny you say that, because I was going to ask you, after he told me that he did that, massive collage. I'm like, that's a little kind of
Oh yeah, no, he's stalked me
obsessive.
for 12 years.
Wow. Oh my God.
Just so that
That
you know. But
in itself is like a topic of like what to do when your ex stalks you because they
it.
haven't let go.
That's exactly. So it took
And I
that long
wonder
for him to
what
let go.
was that, yeah, so that was going to be my question, of course. I want to wrap up, but I wanted to know, was that as a result of the fact that he was trying to be vindictive to just punish you, or was it
No, I think
because
it's good you
he,
know how to let go. Because he would actually,
okay.
when I say stalk, I don't want to misuse the word. He did stalk me, but it was always capturing, sort of like saying, you know, you're the best thing that ever happened in my life. I still want you to know I love you. And on our what was would have been our 20th anniversary, he left this long-winded voicemail. But
Oh
there were things that he
boy.
did that were scary. Like he came across my brother and his girlfriend once in my parents' neighborhood, which is very unusual because he doesn't live there. And then he inadvertently told my brother that I was now living in Oakville. And this was at the time when we were listed in the phone book. So shortly after that conversation with them, I received a birthday card mailed to me by him, which was his way of letting me know, I know where you live now.
Oh boy.
I kept it a secret, right? So that was a little bit, that part was a scarier part. So I would constantly be looking for his truck to see if he was coming around. But, you know, he wasn't out, he was not a violent person. Right, he wasn't out to hurt me, not like in any like he hurt me, but not I wouldn't say on purpose, right? It was his emotional reaction, but he would never lay a hand on me or do anything horrible. So when I say stalking, I mean he just didn't know how to let go for 12 years after our divorce. So I want to be fair to what I'm saying about him because I want people to think that oh, he's going around. But you know, there I would go on my Sunday morning date with my then boyfriend, and I would see him peering around the building in the parking lot
Oh,
right by.
geez.
So stuff like that, yes.
Well, I mean, in his defense, he recognized that you were a great thing and he.
I'll give him that. I'll give him that.
Yeah,
He knew
so
he had lost a good thing. So there you go.
exactly. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much, Connie. I so appreciate your time, your wisdom, your knowledge, all the bits of advice that you've given the listeners and for sharing yourself and
Thank
this
you.
crazy journey.
My
I
pleasure.
really want especially women to be inspired to
Yes.
be resilient in the face of adversity and really know that it's so possible to build yourself back up, to be able to rely first and foremost on yourself and your inner strength, to really believe and have faith in the fact that there will always be a solution and an answer
Yes.
out there, and that if you
Absolutely.
do what it takes, you can overcome. And you are the perfect
Absolutely.
example of that.
As are
You really
you.
are.
As
Thank you,
are you.
Connie.
Don't forget that. So I'm still looking forward to that podcast when it's going to be you on the receiving end of all the
I
questions.
will hold you to that.
I'm being very serious. All right. I
And
hope the audience knows this and we're going to set a date to do
get your
just that.
questions ready,
I
Connie.
will.
I'm ready and I'm in.
Perfect. All
Thanks
right.
again, Connie.
All the
We'll
best.
see you
All right.
again.
Much love and thank you again for the opportunity. Take care.
Thank you for tuning to The Confidential. We hope you enjoyed the episode and found it interesting and informative. Please subscribe to the show to receive notifications when new episodes are released. You can also follow us on social media on Instagram at The Confidential Podcast to stay up to date with all things related to the show. We appreciate your support and welcome any feedback you may have. Until next time, stay curious and keep on learning. Thank you for listening.